Now on News Talk, we bring you a brand new radio drama by Shay Linehan. Robbie is an inventive and skilled career criminal, yet despite his best efforts, things don't go according to plan. Life has a strange way of surprising you when you're going straight. The programme contains strong language and listener discretion is advised.
I got done for blagging. That's armed robbery in layman's language. 8 years. A bit harsh. I mean, we didn't chop anyone up, like some people have mentioned, and we hardly shot anyone. And it wasn't just a money thing with me. I was hooked on it. Look, a lot of things back then. Don't do a job just for the money. And that's what I'd advise any young person coming up to do. Go into something you really enjoy. And I have to say, I really enjoyed the blagging. Myself and Joe Kennedy were like the James boys. A one-horse Midlands town one day, off to the west the next. Round Ireland Robin. The Round Robin. And my name's Robbie. Do you know what I mean? Post offices were our speciality. More like Butch and Sundance, me and Joe were. Though with them, it was trains, of course. You go hungry waiting to rob a train in this country, let me tell you. It's a disgrace, so it is. I started off in banks. Work experience, you could call it. A three-man. Me, a mentor I called the Brain, and a cousin of mine, Christy. I was the main muscle. The Brain was the wheels. And Christy was in charge of the hardware. When we come running out of the bank, the Brain's being moved on by a traffic warden and is nowhere to be seen. I spot a bus pulling in across the street and dash over and get there just before the driver closes the door. Now, what's the tell?
1:30.
I'm rooting in every pocket. I have the guts of 12 grand in this black sports bag I'm carrying, but not a sausage to me name. I couldn't very well open the bag on account of the sawn-off sitting up all perky on top of a pile of cash.
Hurry up!
I'm nearly tempted to go for a broken comedy in the bus when a hand comes around and Christy puts a fiver into me claw. Hairy times. After we were divvying up the cash and tidying away, the Brain holds up one of the guns we used, Christy's personal piece.
Are you sure this can't be traced back to you or Christy?
Course not. And what do you care then anyway?
Well, if it can be traced back to you or Christy, it can be traced back to me. It was your Brain.
And he taps his head as he says that, and the gun goes off and nearly kills him. Most of his ear and a bit of his skull gone. And that poor paid to our less than perfect enterprise team. Come to think of it, it was only after that we start calling the Brain, the Brain. I'm out one night a while later, and who should I meet? Only Joe Kennedy. I knew him from school. We used to go on the Mitch together. I met him in a club in town.
Banks are all high tech now. The cops will have your name, rank and serial number by the time you get out the front door.
What then?
Post offices.
Rob pensioners.
No, the government. It's a victimless crime.
A victimless crime. Butch and bleeding Sundance. Couple of weeks later, after doing our research, we go into this ancient post office near Nice, and there's this fella grinning out at us.
Hand over the cash, or I'll knock that smirk off your face.
He's still grinning and pointing to the glass, even though I can tell he's shitting himself. He speaks through the speaker.
The glass is bulletproof.
Joe takes a shot into the corner of the glass with a hand grip. But all it does is crack a bit. Me man inside isn't grinning anymore, and there's a bit of a pong, so he may have actually shit himself, but that glass is holding out grand. We're in this pub in Kildare town afterwards, and I'm sounding off to Joe, saying how unfair it all is, how there should be a level playing field, when I come up with me idea. To this day, I don't know where it came from. Did someone say something, or did I just get a brainwave? I go to Woody's and come back to show Joe. He's nearly locked at this stage and willing to give Anton a try. The next day, we go back to the exact same post office. Your man is still behind the counter, looking out through cracked glass, though he looks like he's aged a good bit overnight. I'm standing in front of him with the bally over me head, and he does the grinning thing again, but sort of crying a bit as well and saying about the glass, even though it's not half as impressive looking as it was the day before. When I produce the sledgehammer, he relaxes and gives a little nervous laugh. We take an almighty swing and smack the glass dead centre. It has to be dead centre, like when you hit a tennis ball in the centre of a racket. The whole thing smashes into a thousand pieces. Joe is really impressed. We stand there looking at me handiwork as if we are examining a work of art. The clerk is picking little balls of glass out of his hair, but otherwise none the worse. It's bulletproof, but not shatterproof. Who would have thought it?
They've installed that glass in every post office in the country.
A transparent waste of public money, that is.
A window of opportunity, though, for some.
We were nearly forgetting to take the cash until the clerk fella presents it in a white cotton bag. I was going to give him a tip. Would you have to be serious when you're at this kind of game? We had the perfect MO. That's modus operandi in layman's language. Post offices are not the sexy end of the business, but dead clean. I made sure of that. No evidence, no prints, no faces, and no splashing the cash. The money was all being stashed for use at a later time. Very disciplined. You wouldn't think to look at me, but when I'm into something, I'm full on. If we ever got lifted, we'd keep stum. And Bob, as they say, would be a close relative. Just me and Joe Kennedy, and that was it. A small crew means fewer mouths to feed. Fewer mouths, period. If you get me. I mean, they knew it was us. Contrary to popular belief, the cops are not complete morons. We got lifted half a dozen times. Though they threaten you and all that, but what could they actually do? Things were all going well. Me and the cops were keeping a professional distance, and takings were more than decent. In fact, I'd go as far as to say they were smashing. One of the times the cops hauled me in, they put me in this interview room, like I was looking for a job or something. Anyway, I'm in the interview room and this copper I know, decent enough sort, comes in, says I'm being kept overnight. That some mucker cop from Mullingar and a few of his mates are moving from station to station getting confessions. Some sort of crackdown to get quotas filled, without any evidence, mind. All okay at the highest level. A big crackdown on organised crime. Me? Organised? I couldn't organise a Watson in a brewery. This sergeant fella, the nice bloke, Trevor his name was, he was probably playing good cop now that I think of it. But anyway, the sort of fella who's basically decent, just wants to do his job and get home to the kids. You have an understanding with fellas like that. We both have jobs to do, no need for anything to get personal. It's all just business. Keep it clean. I'm always saying that. If I was running the guards, things would be different. They might not be better, but they'd be clean. Anyway, Trevor tells me this special squad are coming later in the evening to get a confession. Someone up high is pissed about having spent all the money on the bulletproof glass and we're just making a mockery of their good efforts. I'm to be left waiting in the interrogation room for this squad to arrive. Trevor says it like he's a doctor giving bad news. Like it has nothing to do with him. All serious. Like he's tapping my x-ray chart with a ballpoint pen. About 11 at night, the squad leader comes in. Muttonhead from Mullingar.
You're going to sign a confession for me, or you're a dead man. First, though, we have the pleasure of the other scumbag.
Apparently Joe Kennedy is in another room somewhere else in the station. But we're well rehearsed, me and Joe. We have our story straight for just such an eventuality. Well, not for this kind of eventuality. We're not into all the violence that's rampant in the business nowadays. It's getting harder to keep it completely professional what with all the headbangers out there on drugs. But you sort of expect more from the cops. The waiting is worse than anything else. About 1:30 a.m, Trevor comes in. He's in a bit of a panic. and tells me it has nothing to do with him. How he doesn't agree with this heavy gang stuff. He's acting like he's seen something and he's trying to warn me without actually telling me anything. He's jabbering on about the kind of things they might end up doing to me and how I'm probably going to cry like a baby. Where's he getting this stuff? What's with the baby anyway? He's very sympathetic, but he seems to go into a lot of detail. I mean, far too much detail. And that doesn't do my nerves any good, I can tell you.
You will sign a confession, eventually. It's not a pretty sight.
No way. But my confidence is starting to slip away. I hate waiting. Even waiting for the bus, it does me head in.
There is a way, though. They're moving on to another case later tonight. So if you were unconscious, you couldn't sign anything.
What are you suggesting? I'm half suspecting he has a lump hammer hidden behind his back that he's about to corpse me with.
If you were to climb on top of the head bollocks...
He must have called him by his real name, actually. Head bollocks. Sounds more like something I'd say.
And hang on to him. They'd knock shit out of you. Oh, it saved a poor fella in here last month.
That's one of the worst ideas I've ever heard.
Well, if you come up with a better one, go for it, by all means.
And he leaves me there. Stewing in my own mental juices, so to speak. He was right. Give them nothing to work with. An unconscious man is a safe man in these circumstances. I made a decision, and it wasn't as if I had a whole lot of options to choose from. I don't know if you've ever got a right good hiding. I mean, a professional hiding. Not nice at all. But waiting for a right good hiding, that's worse. The minutes are like hours. Half of you wants to hurry time on to get it over with. The other half is praying for the end of the world to intervene. Anyway, a half hour goes by. By now, I have it all figured. As soon as the bugger comes in, I'm going to leap on top of him and hang on. I'm not going to lay a glove on him, apart from just hanging on for dear life. Well, maybe bite down on his ear a bit. That's where my energy will be focused. And on the screaming. And waiting for the lights to go out. Trevor even says if I make enough noise, he'll be able to come down and lay into me with a nightstick. To make absolutely sure. As I say, a nice fella, Trevor. I'll definitely have to return the favour someday. The seconds are ticking away. After a couple more lifetimes, I can hear the head torturer fella coming down the corridor. He sounds like he's wearing steel boots or something. Which is my cue to steel myself for what's about to come. There seems to be a small army of flatfoots following on behind me, and the corridor sounds like it's at least 20 miles long. Finally, there's a fumbling in the lock, and the door opens, and he stands there, silhouetted against the light in the hall. I'm ready to pounce. I'm going to go for it as soon as he takes 3 steps into the room. I've decided on 3. 3 is the magic number. But he just stands there like Michael Jackson in concert with a big light behind him. I'm trying to stay focused and hoping the light is not some way of hypnotising me or something. I stand up and he still stands in the doorway and there's just a silence between us that goes on forever. Then he speaks.
He's dead.
What?
He's dead.
Who's dead?
Joe's dead.
Joe's dead. I'm pretty sure I'm only about half in control of me bladder at this point. It's about time for me to jump on him. But what's he saying? Joe is dead. I don't need to be thinking at this stage. My overwhelming feeling is that thinking is the last thing I need to be at just now. Action is my only hope. But dead? Joe? What's he saying? From what I can make out of his shadowy face, he looks genuinely shocked. Unhinged is the word that comes to mind.
That wasn't a man. That was a god.
Joe Kennedy. He looks at me. At least, I think he's looking at me. And says, very quietly, gently almost,
fuck off.
Really unhinged. And the standoff continues. Time goes by, or stands still, or whatever it is that happens when you're at the centre of the universe, not going anywhere. What about me? Somehow embracing the bugger with feigned lethal intent doesn't seem appropriate anymore.
Fuck you! John Dolan is dead! How am I going to tell Sandra? She adored that man.
He turns and staggers off in a daze with his entourage of toughies in tow, leaving the door to the interview room wide open. Like in a dream. I go out behind him and tiptoe after him down the corridor like we're all part of some weird funeral procession, right out past the good cop on the front desk. Trevor just nods at me and sort of indicates the main door out into the street to freedom. Joe Dolan, all the same. Who would have thought he'd save my bacon? One man's king is another man's Kong. I got picked up the following week, and they had the goods on me this time. Well and truly stitched up. Who else could it be but my old friend, Joe Kennedy? Don't get me started on that fella. 8 years. And I did the time. What can you do? I hate fellas that complain. If life deals you lemons, smile while you're eating the things. But it's not easy. You have to be strategic. There's a training unit in Mountjoy that runs courses that you can do to keep your head from turning to stone. Ask anyone what happens in prison, and they'll probably tell you. It's a university for criminals. The young ones learn from the old ones all the ins and outs of the game. There's some truth in that, except they all exaggerate, embellish, gild the lily so you'll think they're important. All generals, no foot soldiers. If they've killed 10 fellas, you can be sure it's 2. And one of them was probably an accident. Plus, it's not like a proper university since it's not what you call structured. The whole course takes about 2 days and the rest is just repetition. Over and over. The same old shite. Which is where the training unit comes in. A bit of variety. And they're not trying to get you to agree with them all the time. You know what I mean? It's run by a bunch of oddball instructors who don't fit into the normal teaching system and are sent there instead. A bit like ourselves, really. And prison gives them the freedom to do some of the things they wouldn't normally have got around to doing. As I say, like ourselves. I got involved in creative writing at the training unit to channel my anger, if you don't mind. The only thing I was angry about was Joe Kennedy. When I got lifted, he disappeared, and so did all of our loot for the big escape down to the Costa. Easy come, easy go, you might say. Not as easy as it looks, bud. Not half as easy as it looks. And it's not just the money. There's the principle involved. Listen, don't get me started on Joe the Rat Kennedy. I'm trying to control those feelings nowadays. I got remission at the end of the sentence. So it was a bit of a surprise getting out. I was just setting up for pool with foot-long Fagin. Don't ask. And the screw says,
"Pick up your gear, Robbie Doyle. You're out of here."
Like poetry to me ears. No time for goodbyes even. I'm not sentimental about prison. When it's over, it's over. You're better to move on.
Make sure you go straight.
Big Frank, as I was heading for the gate.
Straight to the welfare office.
He looks a bit like the general used to look. Big Frank does. He's from the education unit. Has this mile-long comb over, like the general used to have, but his heart is in the right place, even if his hair isn't. And he knows if you don't go on the welfare pronto, you'll be back in prison by the end of the month.
Much as I liked having you here, don't ever come back.
Of course, that's where I went, to the welfare office, since I didn't have me stash because of the rat. There was this young one behind the counter at the dole office, or whatever they call it now. Job seekers. Her name was Jackie. She had to fill out some form.
Job money in the bank.
Just got out on Tuesday.
I didn't ask you about Tuesday. I asked if you had money in the bank.
All right, cheeky bitch. No, I don't.
Are you sure?
I'm not even allowed into a bank. I'm a criminal, love.
I don't need those details. Do you have property?
I'm a criminal.
I don't care what you are. Anyway, lots of criminals have money.
Nice for them.
And houses.
Maybe I'm not a proper criminal.
I'm not asking you about that.
All right.
Nothing at all, so?
No.
Nothing stashed away for a rainy day.
What kind of a day do you call this?
You're a bit of a smart arse. But I'll put the request through.
Thanks, love.
You can't call me love.
Why not?
It's degrading.
Love is.
The way it's used is.
Times have certainly changed.
5 years, was it, you were away? Did you think it'd all wait for you to get back?
You got 3 years off of good behaviour.
That must have been hard for you.
Hard is right.
Just watch the lippy stuff and you'll be all right.
I will.
You seem like a nice young fella.
I robbed banks. Post office doesn't have the same ring. Trying to impress her, you know.
They're robbers anyway.
I shot someone. I lied about that.
I feel like doing that myself in here sometimes.
Could I get you a drink later?
I thought you had no money.
Things might change.
Come in tomorrow.
Thanks, love.
Don't thank me. It's my job. Now fuck off, you little ride, you.
I had to attend this drop-in centre, the start centre, to keep me focused on going straight. Up there in Elm Parnell Square it was. You can do courses and get a voice. There's a lot of basket weavers going there, of course, but fellas too who are in the know can point you in the right direction. One of the counsellors in there called me aside one of the days.
I hear you know a thing or two about cars. I might have a job for you.
It's ages since I did, well, man. Ain't you supposed to be helping me to go straight?
I'm not talking about a getaway car, you gobshite. I'm talking about a real job.
I don't know anything about engines.
You wouldn't need to. Here, I'll give you a letter. This fellow owes me a favour.
She sends me to this place in Dunleary. Reckons it might be better for me to keep as far away from me old haunts as possible. Anyway, 2 days later, and I'm kitted out and patrolling the streets as a bleeding traffic warden. Jesus, I was mortified. Just as well it was Dunleary. Would you believe, I'd never been out there. Ever. My whole life. I didn't even know I was geographically challenged. Should have been claiming an allowance. Anyway, I wasn't put off. My plan was to start small and expand. Like the universe. This knobhead is in charge of about 20 of us, and he lines us up in the morning before we start work. Like we're heading out on a mission into deepest Afghanistan or something. He used to be in the Irish Army. Knobhead used it. Which means the only active service he ever done was chasing sheep around the corridor with his cacks down. He talks to us as if we're on the far side of the moon, addressing his troops. Maybe he's a bit mutton Jeff. How do I know?
Don't any of yous report back to this here base without yous a quota. I don't want to hear no excuses. Hide behind hedges if yous have to. Haunt the hospitals and clinics. Bushwhack them at schools. But bring me in them tickets. If yous don't meet the target, yous are the target. Right?
You know the type. Complete tosser. It's not even like a real job. This traffic warden thing. You just nab people when they least expect it. It's a cross between shoplifting and pocket dipping. But it's legal. And that's a big plus for the chap trying to steer the course down the straight and narrow. My only problem is Knobhead. It's bad enough to have to wear the dopey uniform. He's got this idea that I'm desperate and he can act a hard man with me in front of the others and I won't do anything about it. He reckons they'd be afraid of him if they think he can stand up to an ex-con like me. I don't like a fella to have that kind of power over me. So I take the precaution of finding out where he lives as a kind of insurance policy, just in case. Old habits, as they say. As it happens, he lives on his own in a tiny flat up near the Glenageary roundabout. So, I go over there to check the gaff out. You'd want to see it. All spit and polish, ready for inspection, so. And it's this army of toy soldiers on a big table thing that nearly takes up the whole living room. Knobhead is, what can I say, a knobhead. His security was, to say the least, basic. I'm surprised he hasn't been done over. Nice bit of electronic kit there too. Give him the heads up, but you can't talk to the likes of him.
Comes up to challenge.
One day, I'm on active service up and down Saggy Noggin. I'm falling well behind in my quota on account of the fact that I'm distracted by a few fast feelies and Paddy Powers. I don't know why I do it, but I seem to end up donating all my spare cash to sick animals, though I don't know that sick when I put me money on them. When I get back to the office, Knobhead calls me into this cubicle. He thinks it's an office, but it's a cubicle. Definitely a cubicle.
What were you doing out there all the day?
There wasn't anyone illegally parked.
There always is people illegally parked out in the field. Otherwise, we'd all be out of a job, right? If this happens again, you'll be looking for alternative employment. How easy is that going to be for someone like you?
Someone like me? I was going to clip him one right there and then. Because I don't let fellas talk to me like that. If you allowed that to happen in prison, you'd have draw curtains across your arse and a little welcome mat on your hole. But I didn't lay a glove on him. Much as I would have dearly liked to. I couldn't sleep, thinking about the injustice of it all. I mean, I even know where the chap lives. It feels unnatural not to do something. But I tried to hold firm. Discipline is my new thing. I tried to get some kip, but I'm tossing and turning. I can't take it any longer. I get up out of bed at about 3 a.m. and go down and borrow a car from the car park across the road and go over to Knobhead's flat. I pull the car in and park right beside his car. When I say right beside it, I mean there isn't a coat of paint between the two cars. Right up beside the driver's door, so it is, with the two door handles actually touching. That's quite a skilled manoeuvre, I have to tell you. Don't do this at home, as they say. Then I borrow a van from around the corner and park on the other side of his car and then crawl out the passenger side and lock the door and put on the alarm for good measure. How? Without a set of keys? Or an immobiliser? Ask me no questions, I will tell you no lies. His car is now completely boxed in. It was all only to get rid of my frustration in a non-confrontational way is why I did it. Nelson Mandela has been a great influence in my life, if you must know. We're very alike, me and Nelson. Apart from the fact that he's older and black, and African, and a good public speaker, and dead. He got condensed in prison, like that milk. It's sweeter than the ordinary milk. Why is that? I don't know. Anyway, he was away like me, and I like to think, there before the grace of God.
You're listening to Going Straight, a play for radio by Shay Linehan on News Talk 106 to 108.
Coming up on the show this morning, with over 10,000...
Knobhead is late in the next morning. As you might expect, nabs me straight off.
I know it was you that did that to me car.
Prove it. Me and my big mouth. Appears he has a new CCTV on the outside wall of his crummy flat where he'd usually put a sky dish. I don't know how he missed it. What does he think's going to happen with a CCTV? Paranoia is a nasty affliction. I've seen loads of it. He'll probably boast of his mates how good the system works and they should all get one just like it. That'd be if he had any mates. He'll have to convoy it in his army of little soldiers fighting the good fight all over the dining room floor. Anyway, he doesn't want to fire me, partly because I reckon he was a bit impressed with my initiative in boxing in of his motor. All that trouble had gone to. Most reckon I'll come over there with a couple of cans of petrol some night. That sort of stuff is all in the past tense with me these days. Fair cop is my current attitude to life's, as they say, vicissitudes. I tendered my resignation, nice and peaceful, even though I felt I was the one being victimised. What kind of a world do we live in when you get done for having a sense of humour? Anyway, the traffic warden thing was a bit too much like the old life for me. You don't get sent to prison for being a traffic warden, but you fucking should. The whole thing with Knobhead got me thinking what life might be like for me now. Having to stifle my natural energies and suck it up all the time and walk a straight line for knobs like Knobhead. How are you, Danny? Did you come in the big aeroplane? Did you, Danny? What colour was it? What colour? What colour was the aeroplane? Was it green? Was it a green plane? What colour was the aeroplane? What Was it yellow, was it? I'm going to tickle your belly button, so I am. So I am. Oh, yeah, I'm going to tickle your little belly button like I used to. Yeah, no, I know you're big now. Look, I had the Man UK for you. The new one. I have it. The Man UK. The home one. I have it, yeah. No, I won't tickle you. I was only joking about that. Yeah, of course I was. Put your money on, will you? Hello, Kelly. What? Yeah. When can I see him? You can't stop me from seeing my own son, Kelly. You can't. I don't care what the law says. I don't always see eye to eye with the law. Put him back on. Please. Kelly, please. I need to see him. Please. I'll do anything. Please. Kelly, please. I'm begging you, Kelly. Kelly. Hello? It's why I need to get sorted. Big Frank was the one pointing it out. If I can establish myself, I can get to have Danny for holidays and that. Look a normal dad. Maybe. If they think, you know, I can be trusted. I'm not a bad person. I wouldn't be like my dad. I'd be a good dad. There'd be no rough stuff between me and Danny. I just have to convince Kelly. Kelly and me were an item before I got put away. She went to Liverpool after I went inside. Danny's 7 now. He's mad. Like his dad. Like me, I mean. Good mad. Bit of a character. I started the blagging when Kelly was cautioned for lifting in spar. Nappies and that. Had to step up. You have to be a man. You might as well be dead as not be a man. It's not all about fighting in football. Most of it is going out and not coming home with one arm as long as the other. It's the business of life. No different for any of us. Danny can't go out and get his own stuff. Kelly has to be at home. It's up to me. I can't let them down. I have to man up. When I was inside, he wrote to me. Danny did. He learned to write so he could write to me. Brains are genetic. I don't care what you say. Stay on there about dancing. Kelly only wants normal. That's the hardest thing for me. Normal. And even harder if we have to take orders from gobshites. But I knew I'd have to come up with something. I'm good at spotting opportunities.
If your whole life somehow wasn't much till now.
I was watching this film, Bowfinger, with Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin, about a fella who's waiting for something to arrive by FedEx. Something that will change his life forever. The FedEx man has the power to make it happen. Like Superman without the tights. That's what gave me the idea. That I'd become the FedEx man. I'd visions of changing into costume and telephone boxes like Superman. FedEx to the rescue. And Kelly as Lois Lane, who wouldn't recognise me in disguise whenever I put the old Specsavers on. The first thing I needed was a new driver's licence, a claim and some references. That cost me nearly €500. I could have got them for 100, but I wanted good quality, since I was really serious about going straight. I borrowed money for the van, £8. It was simple, I wouldn't have believed it. It was the first time I got money out of a bank without a balaclava on. And it was so easy. It made me think I must have been an idiot not to have walked in before and just asked for it. Give me the money. I'll bring it back later. Honest. I swear to will. Banks. I got a mate to paint the logo on the van and I was in business. Subcontracted to a well-known courier's. Not FedEx, mind. Unfortunately, they check your background a bit too carefully. But still a major player. Well advertised. I couldn't believe how easy it all was. From courier to courier in under a month. The way it works, you sub on a 50-50 basis. Half of you and half of them for getting you to work. Which is okay for getting lots of it. I was just getting these short runs that weren't worth the shite till I had a word with the control guy and things picked up. When I say I had a word with him, it wasn't with a hammer or anything. He was delighted, since he had a big mortgage on a house in Raheny and a wife and three dopey kids. I made it my business to find out about the wife and kids just in case he wasn't willing to take the money. You need something to fall back on, a plan B. But all that stuff was in the B category and not automatically A as it would have been in darker times, as they say. Her name was Brenda Money. Her mail was the first that I started to open. Not out of nosiness, you understand, but out of interest. I just wondered what she could be doing there on her own and getting deliveries from RTE every other day. Scripts, as it happens. Bits of scripts from the crap soaps they have on RTE. I don't know exactly how it works, but she gets to do the odd story or part of a story. They're so unbelievable anyway, these soaps. Especially the one set in Dublin. I know Dublin. I'm in it every day. Why wouldn't I know it? And it's not like that crap. The time they did the prison piece, I was nearly going to go over there and have a word. She must know it too, even though she hardly leaves the house. She sent in a piece, just a short scene, and they sent it back, asking for rewrites. She was fine about that. But when they returned the rewrites and asked for more changes, I could see that she was getting a bit worried. She looked like she hadn't slept at all. I was starting to get concerned about her, to be honest. I photocopied the piece and brought it over to Big Frank and Talla, and he could see the problem straight off, as I could myself, as soon as he pointed it out. He did a few bits of shifting around and it looked much better altogether.
Oh, that'd be much better with those few changes. That's how she should have done it in the first place. Not a bad bit of work, huh? The pair of us. We might drink to that.
Let me get another case of wine out of the van.
What, if you're sure you can spare it, Robbie.
You be doing me a favour, Frank.
Oh, it's important to keep the creative machinery oiled, huh?
I wish I could tell Brenda, but I'm really shy with women after doing the time. I don't know what it is, but I'm awkward. She's nice. I talked to her about the weather and about the traffic, but I don't think she'd be too keen to get editing tips from the FedEx man, even though I'm not from FedEx. But even if I was, I must sound like some sort of creepy stalker, opening people's mail. But it's not like that. I'm just interested in what makes people tick. When you're inside, you get cut off from people's lives, real people's lives, and it's nice to be able to dip in and out. Anyway, my Brenda got a really pissy letter one day from the series editor, telling her that she was being scrapped from the programme if he had to send this piece back again, and thanking her in a sarcastic sort of way for her efforts to date, and that he wished her every good wish for the future, and that her talents might be better suited to something less contemporary. He could do with a creative writing course himself. I was nearly going to go over there and tell him. It sounded serious though, for Brenda. I told her to phone me directly when she wanted to return the package and not the company, as I had missed one or two transactions. Some dopey guy from Russia was doing control and he got his instructions wrong and I nearly decked him there and then. She called me the following day to ask me to collect the package. I couldn't wait to get the van around the corner after, so I could open it and see what changes she had made to the script. I read the scene again and again, and I could see straight away that this wasn't what the fucker of an editor wanted. Anyone will tell you that I am what they call a lateral thinker. Even people who don't know what that means will tell you that. Give me a problem and I'll solve it, no matter what I have to do. I went straight to the internet cafe in Dunleary and retyped the piece with some of the ideas that Big Frank had suggested, dropped the original in the bin and delivered the new version straight to RTE. Lucky for Brenda, I was on the job. Nothing for several days. Then I got a call from Brenda to collect an urgent package for TG Carr. She was working on something else, something bulky by the looks of it. After collecting the package, I parked around the corner and very carefully unsealed the envelope. It looked like a manuscript for a full-length play. It was a bit jumbled and lots of the pages looked to be multiple copies. I was just trying to get the thing rearranged properly on the passenger seat when they pounced. Two coppers, one either side of the van and some fucker from the courier company. They searched the flat, made a big deal about all the stuff I was storing there for delivery at a later date. Like I was stealing it. Complete shite. Apart from the wine. And the driver's licence and the papers I'd used to get the loan and the van. The bank repossessed that. So I am no longer the FedEx man. Or the nearly FedEx man. Bringing all the good news. In fact, I'm out on bail. And only free because Brenda asked the court to give me a break. Even though she was the one that shot me. She realised that I wasn't such a bad egg after all when the full story came out. Some people thought it was funny that a dyslexic like myself and an alco like Big Frank should be giving lessons to Brenda, who is some fucking famous writer or something, and not the struggling scribe that I thought. I'm sitting in here the other day, in this cafe, after the court appearance, drinking coffee and assessing my future prospects. When she comes, sits opposite me. She was at the hearing, apparently, at the back. Kelly was. Will you have a coffee?
I'm not staying.
You could stay for the coffee.
I need to get back to Danny.
I need to see him, Kelly.
You're his hero. I don't want him copying you, like you did with your dad.
I can be ordinary, just as Clark Kent as the next fella. We can. Give me a chance. Please, Kelly. She gets up and she walks out. But not in an angry way. Maybe the age of Superman is gone. There aren't any telephone boxes to change in anyway. You'd be done for indecent exposure. Put that thing away, bud. When he was born, Danny, I was gobsmacked. Couldn't believe it. Me, a dad. I don't know about you, but the miracle of it all struck me as unnatural. I can't even boil an egg. And here I am, making this perfect thing, this angel. I know some people have a child when they get browned off with a dog. It's just a new kind of dog. It wasn't like that for me. It wasn't planned. Don't get me wrong, it's just... If someone asked you how much life you wanted, pointed to it all in a corner or something and said, help yourself, what would you do? You'd take the biggest armful you could manage. That's what Danny is for me. The biggest armful. Nothing else comes close. And he'll be getting older now. Need a bit of guidance. I'm pretty good in that department. Even though I say so myself. I'm seeing Danny this weekend. Kelly's back in Dublin for a while. It's a trial sort of thing. See how it goes. I don't reckon I'll do any time for that courier thing. But I have to remember to stick to what I know in future. There's a lot at stake. I'm in the window cleaning business now. If you want your windows power cleaned, I'm your man. You see some mad things when you look in people's windows.
In you, there is always
that don't mean some dreams can't come true. Cause it's funny about dreams, just as strange as it seems. There is always one more time. Woo-hoo. Turning corners is only a state of mind. Yes, it is. If there's a heart out there looking for someone to share, I don't care if it's been turned down time and again. And if we meet someday, please don't walk away, 'cause there's always one more time. There is always one more time.
Going Straight was written, produced and directed by Shay Linehan, with Emmett Kirwan, Mary Murray and Joe Taylor. Sound production by John Davis. The programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. To listen back to this or any other News Talk drama, go to newstalk.com.